Our next speaker is Mickey Fulp, a.k.a. the Mercenary Geologist. Mickey Fulp is a certified professional geologist with a BSc in Earth Sciences from the University of Tulsa and an MSc in Geology from the University of New Mexico. Mickey has over 30 years of experience as an exploration geologist, searching for both base and precious metals, energy minerals, oil and gas, as well as water in North and South America, Europe, and Asia. Mickey's worked for a variety of junior explorers, major mining companies, private companies, and investors as a consulting geologist over the past 23 years, specializing in the real typical hands-on field exploration, geologic mapping, property evaluation, and business development. From 2003 to 2006, he made four outcrop discoveries in Peru, Nevada, Chile, and British Columbia. Mickey is well known and highly respected throughout the mining and exploration community due to his ongoing work as a mining analyst and a speaker. His column, The Mercenary Geologist, is well known and is both entertaining and insightful. This afternoon, Mickey is going to present us with a presentation entitled From Boom to Bust and Back Again, a geologist's perspective from 34 years of and seven different careers in the mineral exploration business. Thanks, Mickey.
Thanks for coming. Everybody that functions as an exploration geologist, as I have in various capacities for actually 35 years now, 34 years when I wrote this, knows about the boom and bust cycles in commodities. I am not a certified financial analyst. Anything I say here today cannot be construed as an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell stock. You can tell from what end of the business I come from now because I am a newsletter writer and I write about stocks that I am confident will double in 12 months or less. From boom to bust and back again. The commodity cycles are basically 4 to 7 years long, and that's the boom and bust cycle. But within this are very long-term, 20 to 30-year secular trends in commodities that many people fail to see. And these are all generally always counter-cyclical to world financial markets, specifically the Dow Jones Industrial Average. If you remember, if you're old enough as I am to remember from about 1960 to 1980, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 1,000. That was a period of very strong commodities, secular bull market in commodities that actually started post-World War II and lasted nearly 30 years. In my 35-year career as an economic geologist, I have experienced six price cycles, and actually I originally wrote eight career changes, but there are seven. There's actually been eight. A lot of this can be correlated with the price of gold, especially since Nixon took the U.S. off the gold standard and essentially the world off the gold standard in 1971. The gold price started to rise by 1975. It was at $175. We had some dips. We had the parabolic rise and fall from 1979 to 1981. And we've had basically a bear market in not only gold but all commodities until about 2003, and you can see that in the chart of gold. So we will, in my talk, I will continually use the price of gold as a proxy for what's going on in the mineral resource sector and specifically the exploration sector. We can also use copper, and you can see basically the 20-year bear market for copper, which started in 1980, again with a parabolic rise and fall. You see the parabolic fall portion of it. I could not acquire, believe it or not, a chart for copper earlier than 1980. I looked all over the place. And then you see the bull market starting in about 2004 for copper with a very sharp V-shaped dip on that. Within every bull market, there's going to be bear dips. and corrections. That correlates with the global economic crisis in 2008. So I'm going to go through kind of five-year periods, and they're not always going to correspond. I was unable, basically, to find gold charts on the Internet for other than these particular five-year intervals. So what you see is 75 through 79, and actually through 1980, was a very good year, very good bull market for commodities. It was not always reflected in the gold price because we were really exploring for base metals in the from about 1975 to 1978, 79, then gold exploration started. My career very much followed that. I was a young geologist. We were hired to sample. There was a lot of grassroots exploration. There was a lot of exploration in North America for polymetallic deposits, porphyry coppers, volcanogenic massive sulfides. And then we saw the parabolic rise and fall of gold in 1980 to 81. This is my master's thesis. I did a copper, volcanogenic copper deposit in northern New Mexico. This is very typical of the jobs that young geologists had back then. Sampling, some mapping, but basically exploring for base metal deposits. Well, that was followed from about 1981, actually, to 1985 by a very bear market for all of commodities, reflected in the dropping price of gold, with the exception of a small rise in 83. We were looking at a very bear market for gold. And what happened during that period of time is all the young geologists basically left the business. You found people that were maybe 5 years younger than me. Very early on in their careers, they left the business en masse because they couldn't find jobs. They ended up being high school science teachers and government bureaucrats and environmental scientists. So during that period of time, there was absolutely not much going on. I got lucky. I was working for a major mining company and developing a deposit actually very close to my thesis area. So I was mine mapping. You can notice I actually had hair in those days. And of course, Steve Maynard and I are both sitting there. This is the early 80s, so we had our porn star mustaches going back in those days. And quite different looks now. And then by about 1986 to 1990, we were in another boom phase, and you can see it reflected by the price of gold. And this is the era of the building of mid-tier mining companies, mid-tier gold mining companies, particularly in the western U.S. We had the Canadians finally leaving the colder climes and coming to Nevada and the western U.S. and many gold discoveries. We had mid-tier gold mining companies like FMC and Echo Bay and Westmont and all these kind of mid-tier gold mining companies being built on success in Nevada, exploring for Nevada. At that particular time, one of the impetuses of that was a very small Canadian company bought a very small deposit on the Carlin Trend and became the world's biggest gold miner, and that was Barrick at Goldstrike. I worked for Santa Fe Mining during that period of time, and we bid $50 per ounce in the ground for Goldstrike. Not only that, we had the underlying royalty, Santa Fe Pacific Railroad, and we were outbid by Barrick by double. They bid $100 an ounce, and I can never forget all the engineers at Santa Fe, and I was involved in the mergers and acquisitions and business development part of Santa Fe at that period of time. We were amazed that someone would pay $100 an ounce for gold in the ground. And look what happened. It became Barrick Mining. The thing that to notice here is the stock market crash in October of 87 did nothing but rise the price of gold. But what it did do is gold went parabolic again, but in a longer term sense, and it destroyed the juniors' ability to raise money. And by 1990, the entire sector was moribund. I remember going to this very conference in 1990, looking for a job, and there were no jobs. Luckily, at that time, I had prospecting agreements with major mining companies. Porphyry copper exploration still was continuing. So this was what I would call 86 to 90 was a boom and bust of the juniors. And as you well know, if a junior can't raise money, the sector is not going to go anywhere. And that all changed in 91 to 97. And, actually, here's a picture of boom to bust. And I'd say we were busted in this river. This is the Rio Sarca. And I was working with a couple of pretty famous prospectors. I was a consultant for Kennecott. And I was bird-dogging everything that, not that they needed bird-dogging, by the way, that Perry Durning and Bud Hillemeyer did in Mexico at the time. Because we had a deal with Fisher Watt at Kennecott. And anyway, I'll never forget in October of 1990, we were in Juanacevi, where Endeavor, so we were trying to put ground together in Juanacevi, which is now a quite boisterous silver complex. We had the idea in 1990 to consolidate the Juanacevi district. And at that time, I'll never forget during the World Series, we're watching the World Series in Mexico, and the price of silver went below $5 an ounce and destroyed the Mexican silver industry. Anyway, long story short, we got the truck out, we drained all the fluids, and 5 years later it was still running like a clock. So the next period would have been from about 1991 to 97. So I'm going to split this up into a couple of phases. If you notice, in 1991, 93, let's say 1991 to 93, the price of gold's going down. And we would expect a bear market at that point. However, there's a couple of things that happened during that period of time, and that was the new area plays and the windfall mines, driven by the diamond discoveries in the Northwest Territories, of which three mines came out of that. You know, you have these area plays, these rushes, and you're always amazed at how few major mines come out of them. And then Voisey's Bay discovered by geologists looking for diamonds, and they found a world-class nickel deposit in Labrador. But there was only one of them. How many juniors flooded into Labrador during that period of time? And then finally culminating in a discovery in Piarina in Peru, a grassroots discovery by David Lowell's Arequipa Resources in 1996, which generated another two mines. But one of those mines, Piarina, was developed very early on. The second mine, which came out of that, was discovered in 2001. So we had this five-year lag time, and that would be Barrick's Alto Chicama. We'll address that issue here in a little bit. So we saw a let me back up, and I want to show you the falling gold price, but the business was stimulated by new area plays. At this time, especially the Canadian juniors and even the major miners in the United States went overseas, and the world kind of became the geologist oyster, if you will. We, for the first time, put boots on the ground in unexplored areas of the world, at least from a North American standard, and that stimulated exploration. I can show you my first visit to Chile. I had been working in Mexico in 88 and 80 or 89 to 90 because we felt the mining law was going to change. It took 2 years until 1992. What you found in this period also was foreign governments becoming increasingly receptive to North American investment, foreign investment, where you could go in and actually own majorities of deposits and mines in foreign countries. My first trip to Chile was in 1991, and this is a picture of a Dick Sillitoe SEG trip led during that period of time, and I dare say that half of the people there were in Latin America for the first time, and at least half of those people ended up with significant careers in Latin America, myself included, during right after this trip to the Maricunga in Chile in 1991, if memory serves. And what this boom also did, in conjunction with a mining law change in the United States, where you could no longer do assessment work and you had to do claim rental fees, it actually stimulated staking in the United States. This is a picture from 1995, if memory serves, with a geologist, very good geologist named Jim Walker, and myself, ably assisted by Cody Joe, my Springer Spaniel, who actually would carry a pack on his back and carry all our claim notices on his back. But we staked 395 claims on a porphyry copper deposit, vended it to a Canadian junior. But then what happened? By 1997, here came Briex, and that prospect was never drilled. And to this day, it has never been drilled. So what we see in the price of gold during that period of time, in conjunction with Briex, which actually was exposed in April of 1997, I remember it distinctly because I was working in Peru at the time, and on the phone with a broker, three or four times a day trading Briex between $1.30 and $2.30. I became a day trader on Briex, which ended up being quite profitable, got out at the right time. But what we saw was a peak in gold prices in 1996 and a falling gold price. And it led to, by 1998, there was no exploration business again. For a period of, well, actually it started in 97. I got lucky. I was working for a junior that was well cashed up and continued to 1998. But we had the gold scams in 96 and 97. It killed the business. Oh, so you had Del Gracia Mining in Nevada. That was the first one. Then Briex. And for the life of me, somebody out there can probably help me. There was a big scam in Western Africa, perhaps in Mali at the time. This is Golden Rule, yes, in Ghana. Okay, so we had three major gold scams at the time. I couldn't remember that. But that was also combined with a steep fall in commodity prices, destroyed the business. The only thing good about that that came out of that was the 43-101 regulations in 2001, which I am absolutely convinced will keep another Briex-style scam from ever repeating. It's not going to keep John Peterson from faking assays at Southwest Gold on his computer, but it will keep that sort of a bunch of core with no gold in it and 50 to 60 million ounces in promotion. That I am convinced that will never happen again because of our 43-101 regulations. I got lucky during that period of time. I actually was gainfully employed as chief geologist for a company, a small junior in Peru. We drilled in La Libertad, if you're familiar, part of the so-called Golden Triangle from Quirivilca to Huamachuco to the Sanchez Paredes mine, which is certainly a front for a cocaine operation. This is outside of Quirivilca, and this is Las Princesas. And lo and behold, Las Princesas is now a going concern again. But this is adjacent, the concession adjacent to Barrick's Laguna Norte Alto Chicama deposit. So we were one concession west of there. There are still Laguna Norte Alto Chicama type targets on this concession, recently vended by Vena Resources to a private group of guys who you well know, the same guys that funded Aquiline and Absolute and Amarillo Gold and Laramide and one other one, Sierra Minerals, of which I'm a founding shareholder of at least three of those companies. But I got lucky and was gainfully employed until 1998, and then the business died. And you can see it in the falling gold price again. This gold goes through December 31st of 1999, but the price of gold got down to $255 an ounce, made some brief forays around above 300, and it stayed moribund essentially until about May of 2002. We had a fit and start in June of 2001. I actually went to Peru during that time, but About 90% of the geologists in our business left the business. Some, a significant portion, never to return. I got lucky. I have always done a variety of commodities. I went and drilled two gravel deposits north of my home of Albuquerque, New Mexico. The first one on the right is out near Rio Rancho. It didn't make it. It's a subdivision now. But the one, or on the left, excuse me, the one on the right you see is drilling with a three-foot caisson auger. I learned all about auger drilling. I learned a whole nother part of the business. I was part of a group. We vended this project to Vulcan Materials. There was a complicated three-way land tried with the Santo Domingo Indians, the BLM, and Vulcan Materials. And we actually found a 40-million-ton gravel deposit, which is now supplying most of the gravel for Albuquerque and Santa Fe. It's about two-thirds of the way to Santa Fe. But what it did do was it increased the price of sand and gravel in Albuquerque because now you transport 40 miles. There's just not enough gravel in Albuquerque. There's lots of sand. Anyway, this is a great deposit. I learned something new. And then by about mid-2002, the business started to change, and forward-thinking people, actually January of 2002, at the Cordillera Roundup, I vended some properties, I brokered deals. I put prospectors in Nevada together with companies looking to explore Nevada. Forward-thinking people were seeing in 2002 what was going to happen. By 2003, July, the business started to roar again. A lot of that in the United States was kicked off by the Midway Gold Rush. Every geologist and prospector that had ever pounded on rocks in Nevada made a run to the Home Depot, got 2x2s, furring strips, and was pounding posts all over Nevada. Kind of kicked the whole thing off, and we've gone nowhere but up since then, with the exception of the global economic crisis. So this is some of the stuff I did. I found four outcrops, outcropping ore grade discoveries, two of which are in pre-feasibility studies and look like they will be mines. This is one that failed. This is Lower Mack Ridge in the Big Springs District of northern Nevada. We had tremendous Hansen too hosted gold mineralization in dolomites that Freeport missed. Bob's sitting here going, yep. And Freeport missed it because they didn't map it at 1 to 5,000 the way I did. They made 1 to 10,000 maps. They walked right over it, came in, found outcropping ore grade gold mineralization in a favorable host in the Jarrett Canyon District. Unfortunately, it was drilled and it didn't pan out. Here's another one I did in 2005, and what we saw was during this period of time, things re-drilled. This is an old Naranda play called Las Posadas in near northern Chile. We've now developed, I'm still involved with this company, it's going into pre-feasibility right now. There's 25 million tons of 0.7% open pitable copper there, 0.6% leachable copper oxide. It is basically a blind discovery of about three outcrops on a hill, now 1,300 meters of strike length with brine drilling. But what we found with the 43-101 regs is you have to go in and re-drill stuff. And we re-drill, we twin holes, and then we expanded. Another thing I did was in 2006, I worked in the Tutagon between the Thesis mine and the, what is it called, the Bonanza, I think is what it was called, that Murray Pezum mined in 1990-1991, milled at the Lawyer's Mill. I went in between those, found ore-grade outcrops on my first day on the job. Not to bash Canadian geologists, but outcrops the way to go, guys. The Canadian geologists had never done anything but soil sampling and IP over this terrain. I went out and I found this rock that ran 1.6 grams per ton gold. Unfortunately, again, this was one that was drilled. We had 110 outcrops that averaged 1.4. It was a surface scab phenomenon. As you're familiar, high sulfidation systems will oftentimes put a like boil at a certain level, and that's what happened here. It was very thin and not proved not to be a deposit discovery. Also, I worked in Mexico, and if anybody's ever worked in Mexico, and I'm sure there's people from Vancouver here, you walk through marijuana fields every day in Mexico, and that's what the picture is on the right there. It's a dangerous place to work sometimes, but as long as you mind your P's and Q's, this is the Temeris District in Sonora, Mexico. It is now owned by Palmarejo, or not Palmarejo, help me out? Yep. And there could be a silver deposit here. And then, luckily, in the economic crisis in 2008, I was lucky enough to launch a newsletter at the bottom of the market. I don't have a track record. I'm kind of like Obama. So we've hit on 16 of 17 doubles in the last 2.5 years, doubles in 12 months or less. We got one company to go. They got 2 months to double. I run a free subscription newsletter. I run a sponsorship-based newsletter. Everything I write, say, I'm on, if I'm on TV, you'll get it all there for free. I encourage you to sign up. I've got... I'm 7 seconds over right now, so I'll make this fast. We're in a boom right now, 2003. Who knows how long it's going to continue. We're in the second secular commodities, 20-year to 30-year bull trend driven by emerging market countries. A variety of commodities, all commodities are high right now. We have currency devaluations. The real problem we have here is food inflation and the instability that can lead to. And what we're talking about is globalization. Will it succeed, finally succeed, or will it fail? It's failed all the way from the South Seas bubble in the 1700s in Britain. It failed with the Asian contagion in 1997-98. Who knows what's going to happen? If it succeeds this time, we will continue to see a copper price, which now is at $4.50. We will continue to see a rise in gold price. We're facing a brain shortage. There are no experienced geologists younger than Bob Schaefer and I up here. We're missing a whole generation from the age of about 30 to 50 right now, 30 to 45. Simple supply-demand fundamentals. There are not enough geologists and engineers to go around. We need prospect generators. We need boot leather and drilling. It's still the way we find ore deposits. And I will challenge everybody out there that's my age, find some young geologists and mentor them and encourage them, because who's going to do the mapping? Who's going to be finding the ore bodies when we're all either dead or retired? Now, I'll never retire until the day I'm dead, knock on wood, but we need young professionals in this business. Why do I like exploration geology? I'm addicted to this. I've been doing it 35 years. I get to see the world at somebody else's dime. I get to explore. I get to develop. We create wealth. There's only loggers, miners, and fishermen and farmers that create wealth in the world. We don't trade wealth. We create wealth. But really what we're trying to do is make the entire world a better place to live. I don't always wear a monkey suit. I'm in the field. I would encourage you to sign up for my free newsletter, and you might pick up some stock tips. We have a very good track record. Thank you for your time.